In post-World War II America, a young woman named Eva Gerst steps off a boat with 27 names sewn into her memory like stitches in fabric. Unlike the hopeful refugees surrounding her, she hasn't come seeking sanctuary. She's hunting a monster. The monster is her father. As Eva navigates the streets of 1946 New York with her traumatized companion Bridget, she carries crucial documents and a Nazi-emblazoned gun with a single bullet. But Eva harbors a secret far more devastating than her mission. She isn't Eva at all. She was once Inge von Emmerich, the perfect Nazi daughter. And before that, she was someone else entirely. A Polish child named Anna Ptaszenska, stolen and Germanized through psychological conditioning. How does one reclaim an identity that's been systematically erased? This question forms the beating heart of Bluebird, a haunting exploration of how identity can be weaponized, fractured, and ultimately reclaimed through conscious moral choices rather than indoctrination. If authority is not obeyed, there is no order. This chilling mantra echoes throughout Eva's memories of her father, Dr. Otto von Emmerich, a brilliant but ruthless Nazi physician whose concentration camp experiments represent the ultimate perversion of medical ethics. His goal? Creating the perfect subject who kills on command and forgets afterward. When Eva discovers her father has been smuggled into America through Operation Paperclip, a real historical program that recruited Nazi scientists for American intelligence, she realizes the experiments haven't ended. They've simply changed locations. Now called Project Bluebird, this CIA initiative continues her father's work under the guise of national security. The mysterious Anna Ptaszenska file becomes the novel's central mystery, documented through recovered medical records and Eva's nightmarish flashbacks. Most disturbing is how easily scientific pursuit becomes corrupted when divorced from moral constraints. The cold calculus of both Nazi Germany and post-war intelligence agencies forces us to confront uncomfortable questions. Can knowledge gained through atrocity ever be ethically used? Does the end ever truly justify such means? Powell House stands as a moral counterpoint to the Doctor's Laboratory, a refugee center operated by Quakers where Eva finds temporary shelter. Here, volunteers like Martha Balderston and Elizabeth Betts Whittlesby extend kindness without demanding ideological conformity or performative gratitude. Yet, within this nurturing environment, Eva maintains her fierce independence and determination for vengeance, mentally reciting those 27 names, her personal litany of those lost at Sachsenhausen concentration camp. The contrast between Powell House's gentle community and America's broader response to refugees reveals deep contradictions. While Eva finds acceptance within these walls, outside she faces immediate hostility. A soldier spits on her shoe and snarls, "Kraut." The segregated bus station where whites sit on one side, brown faces on the other, forces her to confront America's own systemic prejudices. Most disturbing is how justice bows to Cold War priorities, with Nazi scientists protected for their valuable knowledge. Within this morally compromised landscape, can someone who has known only hatred and survival learn to trust in human goodness? Jake Katz enters Eva's life like an unwelcome question, a young Jewish American unusually interested in her from their first meeting. His ability to calm Bridget with harmonica music marks him as special, though Eva initially resents this intrusion into her carefully constructed world. Their relationship evolves through meaningful moments. Jake teaching Eva the Lindy Hop, Eva dominating at ping pong while wearing a paper crown, Jake kissing her fingertip in a tender goodbye. When Eva finally reveals her true identity, Jake's initial fury gives way to understanding. Rather than seeing her as tainted by her Nazi upbringing, he recognizes her as a survivor who has repeatedly chosen to fight against her conditioning. "You're a fighter. You're a fighter every time," he tells her when she fears her father might still control her. Jake doesn't dismiss her fears, but helps her see that her choices, not her conditioning, define who she is. Their connection suggests that genuine love can heal even the deepest wounds of identity. Eva tracks her father to America, carrying her mother's Nazi-emblazoned gun with a single purpose: to kill the doctor. Yet, when she finally confronts him, she fires at the glass wall behind him instead. This decision mirrors her childhood act of releasing the bird her father ordered her to kill, her final rejection of his control. "I remembered letting the bird go," she tells Jake, explaining what gave her strength not to become like her father. The novel doesn't present this choice as morally superior to execution. When Russian agents arrive to take the doctor to face Soviet justice, Eva doesn't interfere, recognizing that formal justice systems, however imperfect, must replace personal vengeance for society to rebuild. The epilogue reveals the bitter truth that many Nazi scientists escaped punishment. Dr. Kurt Blohm was acquitted at Nuremberg through CIA interference, forcing us to confront difficult questions about justice versus expediency in post-war America. Memory functions as both wound and healing throughout Bluebird. Eva's fragmented recollections, initially appearing as disconnected sensory impressions, gradually form a coherent narrative, revealing her true identity. Each recovered memory becomes a stepping stone toward wholeness. Violets in her sister's braids, the pressure of piano keys, a bird's heartbeat against her palm. These details represent pieces of her stolen self reclaimed from the void. The doctor's attempts to eradicate Anna's Polish identity through punishment, conditioning, and chemicals fail because core memories remain stubbornly beyond his control. Eva's determination to remember the 27 names of camp victims becomes resistance against historical erasure. When she finds her Aunt Irina in California, she connects her original family to her present self, learning that healing doesn't require erasing her complicated history, but integrating it into a more complete understanding of herself. The Bluebird imagery evolves throughout the novel, from representing the CIA's mind control program to becoming Eva's operational designation, and finally transforming into a symbol of liberation. This mirrors Eva's journey from controlled subject to autonomous individual. Her repeated affirmation, "I belong only to myself," marks crucial moments of self-reclamation, though true belonging emerges only when she connects with Jake and her Aunt Irina. The novel concludes with Eva feeling certainty, like music, like family, like love, that feels a little bit like flying, completing her transformation from controlled to free. In a world where identity is increasingly politicized, Bluebird reminds us that our true selves aren't defined by nationality, ideology, or family legacy, but by our choices. Eva's journey from Nazi princess to autonomous woman demonstrates that redemption comes through honest confrontation with the past, not erasure. When systems fail, we retain the power to create our corner of the world with different values. The novel's enduring message is that even when history's darkest forces have tried to claim you, you can still determine who you become and how your story ends.